It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! An hour late, but I'm here. This is the horn. It's Morium Monday. On this, the 17th day of July, 2023. This is the horn. I'm Robin. And if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is the horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Except today, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, except today. Well, run on over to headon.live, click on chat room. If you've never been there before, pick out a screen name and a password, and you will be immediately greeted by the, well, not early arrivers, but, well, anyway, but the folks who are there who will be happy to see you. And that includes Anatole and Irish Dave and Ralphs and Squeaky and Theo and Tennessee Walter. Hey, y'all. Happy other half of July. I'm sorry I was late to the microphone. Oh, by the way, if you're listening to the podcast, you're not listening live. First of all, I'm really glad you are. We all are. Thank you so very much indeed. Too many ums. But if you are listening to the podcast, please do Brother Deacon Asa a favor. Do me a favor. Do the community a favor. Help grow the community. And click on whatever podcast platform you're listening by. Click like or love or subscribe or something better than ambivalent to or whatever the platform uses to indicate that you want to receive each and every new episode as it comes down the pike. By the way, I got a message over the weekend saying that it appears that Stitcher is going away at the end of the month, so that's one less platform. But golly Moses, there's so many others. There's iHeartRadio, there's Podbean itself, there's Apple Podcasts, Podcast Republic, TuneIn Radio, both the live stream and the archive stream, or the podcast stream. If you listen on TuneIn, please click that little heart button. We're trying to get to 1,000 discreet listeners, or indiscreet. This program can be indiscreet. I'm trying to just think of all the possible Spotify, you can stream at Spotify. But anyway, leave a comment for the algorithm, and again, thank you so much for being part of the program. At present, you are if you are in the chat room, you are incapably moderated by, well, me. So I was late to the air today because it's not a bad drive down to the part of Tennessee that I've been going to for every weekend this month and probably next weekend too, as we try to get my son and his beloved's little family situated in their new home down there in Northeast Tennistan. But there were, well, I wish the big Canadian, I wish somebody would do something about the big Canadian barbecue, because nobody loves hickory smoke more than I. But it was so hazy coming up Interstate 81 through Tennessee and into Virginia that I had the recirc turned on in the car and everything, and my eyes were still burning. It was smoky. And I guess there's road work or something going on I-81. You know, traffic was a bit snarled. And, of course, I was traveling along with my daughter-in-law in the passenger seat. And she and my son are expecting their third. Another little girl. Can't wait to meet her sometime in November. She's going to be a Scorpio. And it was a pretty good drive. I-81's always a racetrack. Hey, Ralphs. Let's see here. But I'm happy to be home. And I'm sorry, I'm looking for something in mail, so I apologize in advance. This will be fun. We've got something
to do. Lyndon B. Johnson.
Yeah, there it is. We'll get to it in a second. Anyway, it's nice to be back. And there should be no... then again, sometimes I wish I had a clip of Supertramp. Not the whole song or anything, but just Supertramp singing, "It's raining again." No singing, Robin. Because thunderstorms have been rolling through. And heavens to Betsy, even while I wasn't here, the power's been doing the Appalachian Power Chihuahua run under the bed thing. So if, again, as usual, if the program just in the middle of, in medias res, then you'll know that Appalachian Power has Chihuahua-like run under the bed. And we'll just sit here and wait until it comes back. Beyond that, the schedule looks pretty reasonable this week. And I have a program note for tomorrow. A dear friend of mine. She is a certified nurse practitioner named Stacy Pace, is going to be on the program. And she has a firsthand view of what it's like to be at the center of these godforsaken maggot culture wars. And I think you will find the conversation quite enlightening. So I highly encourage you to be around for that. And we might even meet some new friends, because she's telling people that she works with about the conversations we're going to have. Everything you always wanted to know about the maggot war on women and trans people. And I'm just terribly, terribly fond of Stacy. she really knows her stuff. And I think you're going to, you'll probably learn things you don't know, even after listening to me for what's coming up on 3 years of this. But I'm getting ahead of myself because every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so consequently, we say thanks to our 17th, 16th, and 15th day of the month subscribers. And that means we say thank you to Labor Man. And thank you to David in Oregon. Thank you to Zed in Iowa. Thanks as well to Reinhard on the Virginia coast. And thank you to Mark. Thank you to Robert. Thank you all for being partial sponsors of the program. If you'd like to be a sponsor of the program, well, there's a box there at headon.live. Right there on the main page, just put in like $10. Click the little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation. And you can set it and forget it and know that it'll come out on whatever day you do that on. And if you do the $10, just so you know, you will be spending, oh, so much. You'll be spending something a little less than 15 cents per hour of programming on a monthly basis. I know. But thank you if you do. The fundraising hole we are in right now is some $1,740. That means that today, and all but $60 of last Monday remain unfunded. And it makes bill paying kind of difficult. It makes keeping this program on the air kind of difficult. So if you'd like to help, I'd really appreciate it. You know, the Gulfstream 5 and the Maybach are long gone. We sold the Gulfstream 5 hangar to a Chinese billionaire. Pennies on the dollar. Had to concrete in the Olympic-sized pancreas-shaped swimming pool. Annette is still not happy about that. But nonetheless, it does take a good bit to keep this program on the air. And even that, it's a damn bargain. When you compare it with, say, the budget and the income of something like, oh, you know, the Young Turks, who have recently decided to channel their inner Joanne Rowling. Ugh. So, you know. But if you can help, it would be great. Hell, if we could get last Monday funded before Tuesday comes around, so we're not entirely, and you know, more than a week behind, that'd be wonderful, because like I said, we're on the downhill slide toward August, because it is in fact the 17th day of July. So a couple of things, because more in Monday, just a couple of little observations. And the first one is, on the way back today, every now and then I mention that it seems like the universe conspires to try to turn me into a vegetarian. It hasn't entirely succeeded, but I have curtailed my meat intake considerably, but whew, today was rough. Because when we got on I-77 northbound from Virginia into West Virginia, there was a big semi up in front of us. And it had a ventilated trailer, which I usually associate with chickens. And it wasn't chickens. it was precious little piggies who had their snouts sticking out of the vent holes in the trailer. It literally, it's like, and then we had to, we played tag with it for 100 miles. I'd pass it, it'd pass me, pass it back, pass me again. And I looked over at my daughter-in-law and said, honey, don't look. And eventually they passed us again, and she looked over and went, oh no. She said, let's pull them over and free the piggies. Oh God, I'll probably get more email from PETA now. Saying, come to the dark side, Robin. We have Tempe. That was part of it. And I woke up Sunday morning and got a notification on my phone. I mentioned a while back that someone gave me a 23andMe. You know, a lot of people do that, and they learn interesting things they never knew about their family. And the last time I mentioned this, I said, I know exactly what I'm going to learn about me. It is as I have said all along. I am the whitest woman in America. And I am. Oh my God. I opened it up and the front page of my 23andMe report just said colonizer. It was awful. I scrolled down, and there was a message that said, is that you, Ms. Brown? No! So it turns out that I'm really a whole lot English. And the part that's not a whole lot English is a whole lot Scots and Irish. Northern Irish, you know, colonizer Irish, Scots-Irish, and English. Not a lick of Welsh, which was surprising to me given my original surname and a couple of other surnames in my history. I was laughing with Tracy about it last night, and she said, oh my God, I'm more Welsh than you are. And I went, I know, right? But the part of me that's not English, Scots, or Irish, and by the way, the English part is like London, and I'm Kentish. I said Kentish. Merseyside, a little Mancusian, and some Lowland Scots. And the part that isn't all that is apparently German. And surprise, surprise, this was the one surprise on the list. I'm a Swiss miss. Like, hee ho. So I've got enough English in me to make me want to take everybody's land. Enough Scottish in me to make me mean enough to do it. Enough Irish in me to make me dance while I do it. Enough German to make me good at marching. And the Swiss part explains me wanting to be on time for all of it and being upset when I'm not. Witness being, you know, an hour late for the program. I'm terribly upset. Although, I do have 78% more Neanderthal DNA than everybody else with 23andMe. And there's like 0.2% of me that comes from undifferentiated Levantine, Syrian, and Egyptian gene lines. And I'm guessing that was the Roman legionnaire who was posted somewhere near Hadrian's Wall. And that's it. Found out that my haplogroup started basically in the Rift Valley in Kenya. We hung out until we stopped being, you know, Homo habilis. And then took off. We camped out on the Iranian plateau for a while. And then wandered westward and turned into Europeans. I mean, come on. I wanted, like, you know, a tiny little marker of indigenous or anybody but the pathetically white person I am. How embarrassing. But that was fun. So between that and the little piggies, it's been an interesting weekend. Well, thank you, Matt. 23andMe, I thought you walked like an Egyptian. I'm doing it now. One hand out in front, one hand out behind. Amelia says, none whatsoever. Oh, Welsh. And by the way, thank you to Ralph's, it being more in Monday and all. We have a little something from Ralph's to really get it started. And gosh, this is dandy. She sent this along. It's an endorsement. But it being more in Monday, you've got to ask yourself, gee, I wonder what kind of endorsement. And Ralph's will double the first $25 that comes in as a result of this endorsement. Thank you, Ralph's. Thank you so much. Get the hockey puck. Get the duct tape. This is, in fact, peak dumbass. That means it couldn't possibly be anyone other than Marginal Trailer Queen. Because she spoke over the weekend at the Turning Point Action, you know, TP, toilet paper, Clavern meeting. The Lincoln Project noting, Build Back Better campaign ad just dropped. God, she's such a she is such a moron. Even if we don't do the whole Moran Monday thing, that was thing and shtick at the same time. Well, we've got this, so this seems appropriate.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Lyndon B. Johnson is very similar to Joe Biden. His big socialist programs were the Great Society. The Great Society were big government programs to address education, medical care, urban problems, rural poverty, transportation, Medicare, Medicaid, food stamps, and welfare, the Office of Economic Opportunity, and big labor and labor unions. Now, LBJ had the Great Society, but Joe Biden had Build Back Better, and he still is working on it. The largest public investment in social infrastructure and environmental programs that is actually finishing what FDR started, that LBJ expanded on, and Joe Biden is attempting to complete.
Thanks for the endorsement, Marge. Jesus. I mean, that's pretty impressive, isn't it? Of course, somebody had to type it, well, at least write it out for her in, like, crayon or something.
Or maybe in Sharpie.
So, in honor of that endorsement, Ralph's will double the first $25 that come in, if someone will do that. Hi, Brendan. Subject line, the English. My father used to say that the English would one day make good neighbors to the Irish, but every once in a while you'll need to blow up one of their fucking trucks to remind them that you have civil rights. Peace, lady. Peace, Brendan. Thank you. And I thought I had no Irish in me. Emilio, you heard the same thing I did. The minute she said transportation, did you notice how she hit the word transportation? Oh no, not the transportation. Sort of puts into perspective the fact that the idea of the transporter in Star Trek. There they were. Poor, innocent, stupid things, thinking that that was a brand new word. Just like we never had pronouns until the 21st century. We all just referred to each other as Og. Marge's endorsements resonating with Matt in San Francisco. LBJ, Biden. That fucking Joe Biden. What's next? Curing cancer? He's working on it. Finish the job FDR started. How did John Kennedy not get a mention in there? Oh, wait, she couldn't because they're all big Bobby Kennedy fans now. Well, I mean, rotted FK Jr. Speaking of which, Kerry Kennedy, who heads the Robert F. Kennedy Human Rights Foundation, Kerry Kennedy said, "I strongly," using all caps, "condemn my brother's deplorable and untruthful remarks last week about COVID being engineered for ethnic targeting." Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Kennedy. "His statements do not represent what I believe or what Robert F. Kennedy Human Rights stand for, with our 50-plus year track record of protecting rights and standing against racism and all forms of discrimination. But where Rotted FK is concerned, that ship, that, as our dear friend Scott would have said, that good ship has sailed and sunk." Oh, yeah, he went full-on eugenicist, Rotted FK did. Why? Because in the United States of America, in the third year of the third decade of the 21st century, going full-on foghorn eugenicist to the maggots and various other assorted hard cases and dead enders and the like is a good dollar. It's a really good dollar. He is just so disgusting. Theo writes in, "The one surprise in my family tree, hey Robin, my people are Welsh, Irish, and German, and Cherokee Indian via my maternal granddad. The preposterous delight lies in my beloved granddad's mane and his nickname. He was Louis Jones, a proud native son of Indiana." Guess what I personally heard his fellow longshoremen call him? Really? You're going to have to tell me, and then I will decide whether or not to read it to the family community congregation. Louis Jones, native of Indiana. Oh, no. Red? Was it red? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I am. And by the way, seriously, a chance to at least get Last Monday funded before Monday is over with. A kind internet friend who wishes to be anonymous has said that they will double $70 if it gets matched. So that would be $95 worth of matching, and that would get us to $190, leaving only $50 of Last Monday. Thank you to our anonymous friend. Thank you so very much. It's been an interesting weekend. Oh, by the way, on the way down to Tenistan, We drove through a land hurricane. Good Lord. Last time I drove through rain like that, I was running away from Hurricane Ida as it was bearing down on my home here in West Virginia, all the way from the Gulf Coast. It was sideways. Visibility was about 15 feet. The rain was coming in sheets. It was standing on I-81 South. There's really nothing to do but keep trying to go on and get through it. At least now we have computers in our pockets, and my daughter-in-law was able to consult it and said, well, we got 29 more minutes of this, because there's a curious degree of specificity with things like that, and they're usually pretty close. There was lightning shooting sideways in front of us across the highway. It was like we were in the actual cloud. I felt like I was piloting a plane instead of driving a car. Creepy. And it made me kind of a nervous wreck. Because, well, I wasn't just transporting my daughter-in-law. Transporting. Who I love dearly. I was also transporting the little granddaughter that I have not yet met. Whom I also love dearly. Emilio. Transportation. Of course, no cisportation. Don't call me cis! And Flavio with a note. Because it's Moran Monday. What the freak out over trans women breastfeeding is really about. Yeah. And I'm sorry to be going down the trans rabbit hole. But it's Moran Monday, and you can find more morans regarding this issue than a lot of others. So a lot of people are flipping out about the fact that hormones exist that can allow a trans woman to breastfeed. The medication necessary is not legal for use in the United States. But it does happen. Evan Urquhart writing at Slate. Thank you, Flavia. People are getting really worked up about the fact that trans women can breastfeed their kids. In late June, Mika Minio-Paluello, who works on climate policy, spoke about water shortages in the UK for a TV segment. In a B-roll, she rinsed out a breast pump. It didn't take long for users of the notoriously anti-trans forum Mumsnet, because it's over on Turf Island, to theorize that the pump was a prop planted so that Minio Paluello, a trans woman who has a child, could pretend she was a regular mother. Mere days after this, Fox News brought the breastfeeding controversy over to the U.S. with a story that dug up a few sentences from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's website referencing breastfeeding in the trans community. I trust this is a progressive enough audience that we're not getting all icky over the idea of breastfeeding. I should add as an aside that I have seen incels out there and the men going their own way and the manliness, manosphere of masculine manliness, masculinity, people having hissies about women breastfeeding their babies, sometimes in public. Because, I mean, it's... And one of the... more than one incel comment I've seen is, apart from providing sexual gratification to men, what good are breasts anyway? Just makes me one great big living facepalm emoji. While the CDC guidance seems aimed primarily at supporting trans men and trans masculines who give birth after top surgery, it was presented by Fox as evidence that the CDC supports breastfeeding by trans women. Then, of course, Rupert Murdoch's New York Post, as well as garbage sites like the Daily Caller and the other usual suspects, But, well, we know how they behave. We usually think of a mom breastfeeding a baby that she personally gave birth to, but that conception is a little limited. In parts of Africa, relactation, that's induced lactation for a woman who's previously breastfed, is a common cultural practice that's been leveraged to feed children of women with HIV or AIDS. Folklore, particularly in the Muslim world, contains many stories of women who breastfed children other than their own, including tales of virgins doing so without having ever given birth. Virgins! There are also rare reports from around the globe bordering on folk tales of cis men breastfeeding children. Okay. Cis male lactation does exist. Prolactinuria? Is that? Maybe I'm wrong. But none of that matters because the various and sundry mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing, tooth-picking with their toenail clippings, Republicans and various forms of maggot are absolutely lit up. Galactorrhea. Not prolactorrhea. Galactorrhea is a side effect of taking domperidone. And so, yeah, over at Mumsnet, they were having a full-on hissy. It would be poison for the baby! No, no, no. Because organizations like La Leche League that promotes breastfeeding because breastfeeding is the best way to feed a newborn, great big whopping doses of antivirals that come from the mother in the colostrum, keeps baby from getting sick once baby is living in the outside world. So over at the Daily Mail, they had a meltdown, too. On July 5th, they said, trans women are self-indulgent. I'm sorry, it's the Daily Mail.
Trans women are self-indulgent and selfish. And it might pose a risk to the babies.
Never mind that the same scale that's used for... But it never... Right. And, of course, because there's nothing quite like sexualizing a trans woman, the various and sundry feminist-appropriating reactionary transphobes, that spells farts, began squealing about how hypersexualized trans women are. And it's not real milk. And... It's also bound up in racism, because nothing in the United States isn't touched by issues of race. It's a well-known fact that the white plantation aristocracy, the women thereof, would routinely hand over their newborns to a wet nurse who happened to be enslaved. And as like as not, probably the baby had half-siblings who were living down in the quarters. And that went on for generation after generation after generation. And back then, no one seemed to complain about it. Well, because after all, old Miss, she couldn't be bald now. Right? So, on Morin Monday, here we are. And It's really no surprise. The Daily Fail, Flavio says, my point, holy shit, we need to bring back the teaching of human biology in our schools. Not in place, not in the Confederacy, Flavio. Because you can't teach, because that's gender ideology. Now, even mentioning breastfeeding by cis women in schools in Florida would be enough to cause Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis to have a full-on conniption. And maybe get his pet legislature to, I don't know, pass a law banning breastfeeding, public or private. And call breastfeeding mothers groomers. Oh, God, it does get wearisome. Thank you, Darlene. Darlene in Connecticut just wiped out both challenges. Thank you so much. And so with what Matt in San Francisco did, that means we have only $30 to go to get last Monday funded. That is so, so, so wonderful, Darlene. Thank you, and thank you, Matt. Maybe we can get Monday started. Maybe take a bite out of Tuesday before tomorrow, Titanic Tuesday comes. Girl can hope. I almost feel like we need to fire up the Calliope for this one. I mean, it makes my liver quiver. We don't, and we may never know exactly how near disaster we were in the four nightmare years of Nitwit Nero squatting in the White House. If you can get past their paywall, there's a horrifying article in the New York Times the headline reads, Trump and allies forge plans to increase presidential power in 2025. And our pal Joy up in Ann Arbor said, I just listened to Michael Cohen's latest episode, interview with Miles What's-His-Name, the chief of staff to the Secretary of Homeland Security, the guy who wrote the anonymous letter about the disastrous mayhem inside the Trump White House. She said, my blood ran cold. Had to listen to it again. If Dump gets in there again, we're done. He wanted to eliminate, get this, he wanted to eliminate the VA so that he could use the money as his petty cash account, but they talked him out of it, not because it would be cruel, but because it would have hurt his reelection. He also wanted to create his own private army. And the Doomsday Book. They managed to hide it from him for 4 years, but he won't appoint anyone other than maggots next time. No more adults in the room to keep him in check. I'm hoping against hope that President Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. can face him in the general election and hand him his felonious ass. Who knows how many times he'll be indicted by the time that rolls around. Hell, he may even be convicted. Because another thing to consider is that he is doing, Tangerine Tiberius is, everything he possibly can to delay the trial so that it can happen during the campaign season and thereby get it pushed out until after the election, at which point he can scream,
Which
he's been screaming all along anyway. But here's the thing. If they have the trial, say, in October of this year, even then, the trial's going to take a while. Sorry, I didn't mean to do that. And then, if he is convicted, will come the appeal to the circuit, D.C. Circuit Court. Well, no, it'll be the 11th Circuit Court because Florida. And then to the Supreme Court. And it's entirely possible that at some point in time, particularly once it gets in front of our most puissant, dread sovereign, supreme Catholic majesties, that they'll just kibosh the whole thing. It's not a reason not to do it. This has to happen. But the timing of all of this is beginning to occupy rather a bit of my attention. Which brings us to this More in Monday story. Speaking of face palms. Sorry, bougie bottle. Water. So back when Nitwit Nero was braying and prattling on and on and on about that big beautiful wall that Mexico is going to pay for, one of the things that he was obsessed about was making sure that the wall didn't have any doors in it. Because in 2019, he heard somewhere that cattle ranchers in Texas were herding their cattle through openings in
the big beautiful wall that he didn't build, that Mexico didn't pay for,
to let them graze in the green spaces along the Rio Grande. This, of course, triggered a xenophobic, racist, paranoid fantasy in the thin gray settlings that sloshed around between Nitwit Nero's ears and passed for brains, and in which the spirochetes swam shrieking each and every day. And he began to grunt and hoot about
thousands of undocumented immigrants pouring into our country.
And so the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, who at that time was Kirstjen Nielsen, whose chief of staff was Miles, whom Joy referenced, kept telling him,
sir.
Yeah, listen, that's not happening. It's not, no, it's not going to let thousands, no. It's just the spirochetes screaming, Mr. President.
You know, I think I had a spirochete as a child, made all those interesting designs. Was that an Etch-a-Sketch?
No, the Etch-a-Sketch is what you tweet on, sir. So at one point he looks at Kirstjen Nielsen and says,
give the ranchers ladders. They can use ladders to get to the other side, but not doors. You could use small fire trucks. Call the local fire stations and use the ladders on their trucks to help them get over.
Have you ever seen a cow climb a ladder? Have you ever even seen one try? Oh, those poor little pigs. They probably wouldn't do any better with a ladder either, but they're smarter than a cow. So, Miles Taylor, and because this is all in his book, who was at the time the chief of staff to Kirstjen Nielsen, said,
he said the idea of sending cows over the wall with ladders was, and these are his words, incandescently stupid. And it took every power of human control that Miles Taylor had to keep from just, you know, spit take laughing in Clementine Caligula's face. And again, and straight out of Catch-22, Miles Taylor reports hearing him, Mango Mussolini, grunt about how unhappy he was that members of the National Guard that were sent down to the border weren't allowed to open fire and just massacre migrants on sight. In his book, Taylor says, when it comes to Trump, the truth is always vastly more idiotic than fiction. He spent more time coming up with imbecilic ideas at the border than he did focusing on his job. Sometimes the ideas were stupid. Sometimes they were illegal. Often they were both. Now, I remember the Monty Python bit about ovine aviation. You know, have you ever seen a sheep in the simple act of patching? Ladder climbing. Maybe he was watching the Westminster Dog Show. You know, where the dogs will run through the obstacle course and leap over things and run up ramps and down ramps and.
Why can't we do that with cows? You just have to build the ramps a little bigger. We can't have doors in the wall, damn it!
We will never know. Just how near we were to disaster, but hopefully knowing these things now, we will understand how near we are to disaster still. Based on that article from the New York Times by Jonathan Swan, Charlie Savage, and Maggie Haberman, Donald J. Trump and his allies are planning a sweeping expansion of presidential power over the machinery of government if voters return him to the White House in 2025, reshaping the structure of the executive branch to concentrate far greater authority directly in his hands. And you know Stephen Miller will be back. The article references the Heritage Foundation, I'm not back to smoking. Canada is. The article identifies a young maggot by the name of John McEntee, whom Jonathan Swan describes as a young take-no-prisoners loyalist with chutzpah. And after Nitwit Nero's first impeachment, McEntee was brought on to, quote, activate the plan for revenge. The Guardian in February 2020 referred to McEntee as a baby-faced assassin, part of Nitwit Nero's
deep state purge.
At one point in time, McEntee was his body man and personal aide. They had to can him when he couldn't pass a security clearance. And was actually under an investigation by the Department of Homeland Security for serious financial crimes. So naturally, Julius Geiser rehired him to be
director of the White House Presidential Personnel Office.
Where, again, straight out of Catch-22 by Joseph Heller, he started a campaign of loyalty tests. also from Catch-22, that famous passage for those of you who have read it, where was it Major Cathcart's son-in-law? Or was it General Peckham's son-in-law or General Dreedle's? Anyway, one of them had a son-in-law who had to explain to Dad that he couldn't just randomly order soldiers to be shot. All the great satire of the mid-20th century seems to be coming back to haunt us, whether it's, it's not so much satire, but the Caine Mutiny with Captain Queeg rattling those two ball bearings and prattling, I did it again, prattling on about strawberries and ice cream. Or Catch-22, where we had a president in which a member of the military says things that were later said for real and deadly serious by someone squatting in the Oval Office of the United States of America. Jonathan Carl over at ABC News even went so far as to refer to McEntee in the Atlantic as the man who made January 6th possible. Back in 2021, Carl wrote, McEntee, and understand, Jonathan Carl is a right-winger, okay? He was brought up and schooled through right-wing media chop shops. But even he wrote, McEntee and his enforcers made the disastrous last weeks of the Trump presidency possible. They backed the president's manic drive to overturn the election and helped set the stage for the January 6th assault on the Capitol. Thanks to them, in the end, the elusive adults in the room, those who might have been willing to confront the president or try to control his most destructive tendencies, were silenced or gone. But McEntee was there, bossing around cabinet secretaries, decapitating the civilian leadership at the Pentagon, and forcing officials high and low to state their allegiance to Trump. And so the report in the New York Times today describes what is apparently a plan, quote, to centralize more power in the Oval Office and stretch far beyond the former president's recent remarks that he would order a criminal investigation into his political rival, President Biden, signaling his intent to end the post-Watergate norm of Justice Department independence from White House political control. Among other things, well, he wants the Federal Communications Commission to be under direct presidential control. He wants to impound constitutionally appropriated funds by Congress and not spend them. That's been outlawed since Richard M. Nixon. Civil service protections would end for tens of thousands of career civil servants, making it easier to replace them with maggots. John McEntee went on to say, the president's plan should be to fundamentally reorient the federal government in a way that hasn't been done since FDR's New Deal, who is now involved in mapping out the new approach, John McEntee. They are working on it even as we speak. McEntee went on and said, our current executive branch was conceived of by liberals for the purpose of promulgating liberal policies. There's no way to make the existing structure function in a conservative manner. It's not enough to get the personnel right. What's necessary is a complete system overhaul. I'm just curious. Would anybody care to act as the Horn ad hoc John McEntee Research Department and tell me where this super genius went to college? Russell T. Vaught told the New York Times,
What we're trying to do is identify the pockets of independence and seize them.
We also find out in the Times article today that Stephen Miller had a plan to separate and kidnap 25,000 more brown babies from their parents. They can go to work in the slaughterhouses in Arkansas. Yeah. Yeah, even, well, Bill the Bloody Crystal, who was wrong about everything during the W administration and the Obama administration, well, he proved himself worthy of a comparison with the stopped clock, because he said, in 2024, authoritarianism, unchecked, unembarrassed, and undisguised, will be on the ballot. Over at NBC News, Michael Beschloss has said of the New York Times article, anyone who opposes a presidential autocracy in America should read this closely. Over at MSNBC, Mehdi Hassan said, read this piece. Be afraid. This is on the verge of happening 18 months from now. Now ask yourself this question. Are cautious, in-denial, business-as-usual establishment Dems equipped or even willing to address this anti-democratic, autocratic threat? And we're supposed to do what? Pray?
Pray louder, Christian.
Oh, God can't hear you. Meanwhile, Joe Walsh, a former teabagger congressman from Illinois, said, deciding how to vote in the 2024 election will be super easy and super straightforward. If you want a dictator in the White House, vote for Trump. If you don't, vote for Biden. Kind of wish he wouldn't whisper that kind of stuff into the ear of the universe, because you know what? We have more people with the power of the vote in this country who, working alongside that hateful racist relic from the 18th century, the Electoral College, would say, yeah, dictatorship, please. And kind of hate to go there, but going to go there. Up until about 1930 or so, the German people were known for their stolidness and their seriousness and their no-nonsense-ness. And then the world found out that they had a little secret. A taste for authoritarianism and dictatorship. Tom Nichols, who many of you have seen show up on TV as a commentator, who has an impressive resume, when he saw the title of the New York Times article, Trump and Allies Forge Plans to Increase Presidential Power in 2025, said, well, that's one way to put it. Another would be to establish an autocracy. Maybe instead of Mehdi Hassan asking whether establishment Democrats in Congress are up to the task, it might be wise to ask if the multimillionaire for-profit media are up to the challenge of opposing autocracy and dictatorship. Because I'm never going to forget that we only got Nitwit Nero because of the fawning, overbearing, overarching lust of the multimillionaire for-profit media for eyeballs on screens and clicks on links. So I felt like that article was more than worth the time. Read it if you can find it somewhere. Read it if you have a subscription to the New York Times. Sometimes I think maybe the New York Times should kind of, oh, I don't know, take stories like this and say, this is deadly serious. We are providing this article for free because every American needs to read it. But again, there we are, the profit motive. Now back to the doors and the walls, Jeremy says, if the farmers and ranchers had just waited till a stiff wind came along, nature would have provided a large door in the wall, as these shiftily built slotted walls fell over quite often.
That's a lie, it's a liberal hoax, it's a witch hunt.
Oh, thank you. I knew, that, and you know what? I'm not at all surprised that Theo knew the answer. In Catch-22, the son-in-law who has to explain, Dad, you can't just have them shot. Well, why not? What's the good in being a general if I can't? Theo lets me know it was General Dreedle's son-in-law, played by Austin Pendleton in Mike Nichols' film. And you know what? You say Austin Pendleton, and his image appeared immediately in my mind. Austin Pendleton, one of the most memorable faces of that era and into the next in Hollywood. And by the way, over the weekend, Flavio kind of got me a little bit worked up. He wasn't trying. It wasn't anything he said. But he posted an article about, and I went back and reconsidered it, but five unsung movies that depict how Hollywood has brought labor messages to the silver screen. At first, I was like, wait, what? But then I caught back up on the word unsung. But the first thing that came to mind for me was, where the hell is Matewan? Because I don't think there is a better movie about the struggle for basic, decent working conditions and union organizing than John Sayles' 1987 film. And that immediately got me going. And I checked, and lo and behold, Matewan is still free to view on YouTube. And I cannot recommend it highly enough. It is absolutely on my top 10 films list. Not just because it's about West Virginia, but because it so brilliantly displays how bad it was. And it's not fiction. It is, of course, there are elements of Hollywood taking liberties, but John Sayles tried not to take too many of those. And, of course, if you were listening last week, you know that my dear friend, our dear friend, Dan Fisher, had his first properties job working on that film. I knew several people in that cast whom I'd worked with in the theater department at WVU. And the scenes of company gun thugs throwing people's belongings out into the road. It was real and it happened. It didn't just happen in West Virginia, but it happened with brutal regularity here. So if you don't have anything to watch, feel free to go over to YouTube and just type in Matewan, M-A-T-E-W-A-N, Matewan. Set in a town in Mingo County. West Virginia, where 17 years prior to the events of the film, a little girl had been born. To Viola Luzetta Choate Davis, whom family lore said was descended from indigenous people, but wasn't, and her husband, Joseph Borders Davis, nicknamed Kentucky Joe. And his middle name, Borders, had been anglicized back in the 18th century from a German name, Bader. And that little lady, that little baby, born in 1904, 17 years before the events of Mate 1 in Mingo County, was my granny, who came to life in a place they called Bloody Mingo. And as soon as he could, Kentucky Joe got his little family that was growing and growing and growing. They called Viola Luzetta Loney. He packed up, he was a coal miner. He worked in those gassy holes. And he packed up his growing family and got them the hell out of Mingo. I drop into the accent for that. The accent you'll hear in Mate 1 is very accurate and very curious. It's one of those accents that had stayed because of isolation in the hills. It stayed pretty much the same for 100 or more years, and you can still hear it in southern West Virginia and eastern Kentucky today. In Mate 1, when the guy comes up with a bloody nose, the union organizer, played by a very young Chris Cooper, goes about setting the young man's nose because there's been a brawl at the railroad. And the woman running the boarding house comes out and looks at him and says, "Ye doctor?" And it's funny, but every time I view the film, it's kind of music to my ears. My grandmother Janie had that same accent. And the a cappella singing in it will make the little hairs stand up on the back of your neck. Just a little digression. So we are into what would dominate, had I been on time, we are into what would have been the third hour of the program, but is in fact the second. I should probably not fill a lobster because, well, we've had a weekend to stew over things, haven't we? Labor film. George and Korsgold suggests The Cradle Will Rock, radical script, many a fine actor, famous characters from the Republican Great Depression. I feel like I've seen that at some point in time. Worthy recommendation. And it is odd that in this third decade of the 21st century, you have some of the same issues being faced by writers and actors in Hollywood. You know, we tend to think, oh, our writers and actors in Hollywood, they must be rich. A lot of them are struggling and scrambling to get by. Meanwhile, the studio executives are not exactly living on rice and beans. The working people, however, are. Another great line from Matewan. Listen, there's two kinds of people in this world. Them that work and them that don't. You work, they don't. Talking about the coal company. It remains applicable. Back to John McEntee. Ralph's serving as the Horn ad hoc John McEntee Research Department. Notes, he comes from Fullerton, California. Raised in a Roman Catholic family. His daddy is a booker. I said booker. He books celebrities for functions and to-dos. He played... Darlene, you're going to hate this. He played football for the University of Connecticut Huskies. And rose to starting quarterback. By the next season, he was the third string quarterback. He is 33 years old and prepared to utterly usher in a fascist dictatorship. My theory, I guess, has been proven wrong because I entirely expected to read that he was a proud son of Harvard or perhaps a Yalie. That's what happens when you get mired in bias confirmation. So again, if we can raise $30 more, we will have last Monday fully funded. Sorry to keep mentioning it, but that's where we are. I get nervous and worried. Nitwit Nero, meanwhile, is engaged in so much losing. He lost again. Sorry, old story. My bad. He lost in Georgia trying to shut down Fonnie Willis's investigation. Meanwhile, and observed, when you travel Interstate 81 up the spine of Appalachia in Tennessee and Virginia, as you're northbound, the mountains are, and it's the Allegheny Front. It was the part that was hard to get through. So consequently, my ancestors came through. Because you always, they sent, you know who the English sent in to deal with the indigenous folk. But the Allegheny Front looms to the west of you. Nothing like the Rockies, of course, because these are ancient mountains and they have been worn down, you know. Give the Rockies a couple more 100 million years and they'll look like Appalachia, and Appalachia will be flat as a pancake, I guess. But they do. They loom. They still loom. Off to the west of you. And normally this time of year, they are so lush and so green and so beautiful. Today they were so enshrouded in smoke and haze. There was basically no color to them. They were just a sort of washed out gray. And this summer of smoke is probably going to become our new normal. There's a tremendous chance of it. And I gotta say, I'm not looking forward to it. Because, well, climate change is real. No matter how many times Geezer discussed this, barks and grunts, it's a Chinese hoax. So let me introduce us all to Nancy Walton Laurie. She's a Walmart heiress. She has become spectacularly wealthy via people going to Walmart to buy cheap Chinese crap in the store that her daddy or granddaddy, I do not know, Sam Walton built in Arkansas. And so it was that she had her super yacht, because if a Walmart heir can't have a super yacht, then what's a heaven for? Well, it was docked in Ibiza. By the way, the Walmart heiress's yacht is christened Chaos, K-A-O-S. And so whilst the yacht was docked in Ibiza, a group of climate change activists, two of them, from a Spanish group called Futuro Flavio, what do I do with the G in vegetal? 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 Well, they got themselves some fire extinguishers and filled them up with red and black paint and hosed down the super yacht Chaos. And then they unfurled a small banner in English that simply read, "You consume, others suffer." So then the poor schlubs in the employ of the Walmart heiress hustled down to try to hose off the paint, but oops, too late. It stuck, and they uglied up the Chaos real good. By the way, the Chaos apparently doesn't even fly the American flag. It's flagged out of some other country that is not Spain. Adding to their statement that you consume, others suffer, the activists said the richest 1% of the world's population pollutes more than the poorest 50%. They are condemning us to a future of pain, misery, and desolation. Spanish police came along and arrested them. Activists say they expected them to be released today on bail. The activist group, Futuro Vegetal, sorry, I'm at a loss, my Spanish sucks. Remember, I'm German, Swiss, Irish, Scottish, and English. I'm kidding. My Spanish sucks because I never had Spanish. But the group said, the only reason we continue to maintain an economic system that leads us to eco-social collapse is to sustain the privileges of the small privileged class. The mega-rich live off the suffering of others. Apparently it was a full-on campaign, because they also spray-painted a private jet. Is it okay if I hope it was Harlan Crowe's? I mean, I know it wasn't, but a girl can dream. They spray-painted a private jet at the airport in Ibiza. Your luxury, our extinction. Nancy Walton Laurie didn't make any statements. She is the daughter of Walmart co-founder Bud Walton, presumably brother of Sam. She's one of the 300 richest people on planet Earth, valued at more than $8 billion. That's not exactly Leon Scum money, but, well. Sailing magazines had done pieces on the chaos, talking about how fancy it is. It had an onboard movie theater, a sauna, a swimming pool, and in a stroke of irony, a yacht with an onboard aquarium. Second Star Trek reference. In one of the later Star Trek movies, Captain Kirk asks some being, what does God need with a starship? What does a Walton heiress need with a super yacht? Thank you, Christopher. Christopher jumped in. Almost there. And we are. There's only $20 to go to finish off last Monday. Thank you, Christopher. Thank you so much. Darlene in Connecticut says, oh, sure, I just turned 38 last Thursday. Thanks, Joey. Ha ha. $15 challenge. Come on, people. Let's bring the fundraising home for Robin, who I know just loves the UConn Huskies. Love them. Love them. It was so much fun when my beloved Mountaineers were in the Big East with the Huskies. But they're not hard. I mean, sorry that that little goose-stepping fascist went to Connecticut. The alumni must be so proud. Maybe. Darlene, where is UConn? Bridgeport? Danbury? Oh, and speaking of Connecticut, there's a... Because we haven't had any of this in a while. People just can't seem to quit wondering exactly what happened and to what gory degrees the libertarian death thermos imploded. With an article at Alternate saying that many, there's that Fox News style handbook again, many still wonder how exactly the sub became no more. Well, an expert in deep dives, an industry insider, Rob McCallum, has some ideas, and this past Saturday, 60 Minutes Australia ran a piece interviewing Rob McCallum, who had told Stockton Rush that he was putting his wealthy tourists' lives in Hat Hazard and said, you know, you really should stop using your libertarian death thermos until an independent agency has certified it. McCallum told 60 Minutes Australia, can't resist doing my cheesy Crocodile Kincaid accent. I apologize. I just love it. They were diving in something that literally was a ticking time bomb. And went on to say the whole volume of the submersible collapses in about 2 milliseconds. And it takes 25 milliseconds for the human brain to detect a threat. So it's not so much that you die as that you cease to exist. And then added, it's almost the perfect end. You sort of just go, wherever the candle flame goes when it goes out. And it's still chilling and it's still horrifying. Oh my God, how did I miss this earlier? That's for Brother Deacon Asa going all the way back to the maggots having his, you know, actually farts. Feminism appropriating reactionary transphobes. Going all the way back to the farts having a hissy on Turf Island and now here. Over trans women, trans men lactating. Brother Deacon Asa said, so what you're essentially saying is that Ben Shapiro's wife will never be in danger of having to wet nurse? I guess. Maybe. There's never a bad time to make sport of little Benny. My dry wife, Shapiro. And so in somewhat more, considerably more serious news, one gets the feeling that the war in Ukraine is about to take a decidedly more nautical turn. There was an attack on the road that leads to the bridge to Crimea, or between Crimea and southern Russia. Naturally, Putin said it was Ukraine's doing. Of course, you can't believe a word that that maniac, paranoid maniac, says. With Putin saying that it was cruel and senseless act. Bridge has not been used for military transportation for a long time. Apparently it may, however, be part of a drone war. Because Ukraine isn't happy just to get the land back that was stolen from them with the beginning of the war, but with everything that Russia has stolen since 2014. And so Crimea is on the list, because Crimea is part of Ukraine. So apparently Russian tourists, in this case, if they're trying to drive to Crimea from Russia, in the middle of a war, I think that raises them to the level of Turons, an elision of tourist and moron. This is Morin Monday. And so alongside the news of the, and that bridge has been a center of contention, but alongside the news of that, Mother Moscovy announced today that they are unilaterally ending the Ukraine grain deal right at the time that it was set to expire. That time has since passed. It was due to expire at midnight Istanbul time. Wheat futures went up 3.5% with the news because, well, capitalists will never miss an opportunity to make a buck. And war can be very good business. The whole deal was put together by the UN a year ago to make sure that grain from Ukraine's breadbasket could reach a hungry world. And well, Putin has said nyet to any further extensions because Russia, being the aggressor, wants to be treated equally in its grain and fertilizer exports. Putin got on the blower and bitched at Cyril Ramaphosa, the president of South Africa, because a lot of this grain goes to the African continent. Kremlin spokescreep Dmitry Peskov said, "The Black Sea Agreement ceased to be valid today. As the president of Russian Federation said earlier, glorious and noble President Vladimir Putin. Deadline is July 17th. Unfortunately, the part relating to Russia in this Black Sea Agreement has not been implemented so far. Therefore, its effect is terminated." In a Monday statement on Facebook, the Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs said, "Only if concrete results are received, not promises and assurances, will Russia be ready to consider resuming deal." Agreement was only directed to serve narrow self-interests of Nazis in Kyiv and the decadent gender-fluid West. I added some language in there, but, you know. So, just so we have a complete understanding of the situation, Vlad Putin, great humanitarian leader of Mother Russia, is willing to starve an already hungering continent because of his monumental evil and vulgar ego. Vulgar? See what I did there? Vulgar boatman? Ah. And I immediately thought back to the Second World War and the way that American sailors, merchant marine sailors, put their lives at risk on what was called the Murmansk Run, keeping a lifeline open to Russia, Soviet Russia, with supplies from the United States of America. And I continue to think about how when the Soviet Union was starving, but still nuclearly capable. The United States sent grain, ton upon ton upon ton upon ton of grain to the Soviet Union so that its people wouldn't starve. Not so much with Putin and Mother Russia now. Mother Muscovy. Because Putin, in the sick and twisted, worm-hollowed corridors of his brains, he being an old KGB thug from jump, and essentially a thief, hopes to starve governments into submission, into trying to leverage pressure against the decadent West. In order to achieve his goal of forcing the submission of a country that never lifted a finger against its humongous neighbor. And I don't want to hear any of that silly horse shit about, there are Nazis in Ukraine. You crow Nazis! There are fascists everywhere. The rise of fascism is a global problem, which mostly liberal democracies are unwilling to acknowledge or deal with. And frankly, the global home of fascism now is Putin's Russia. If there are still lefties in the United States who still identify Russia as somehow still being part of its authoritarian communist past, well, that just means that they need to get out more and touch grass once in a while. But when I thought about the Murmansk run, oh, I had already been thinking about the Black Sea. And I also thought about the U.S.-British Lend-Lease Agreement, in which we provided ships, planes, tanks, what have you, to the U.K. in order to resist the Nazis before we were even in the war. And if Putin remains recalcitrant and remains sunk, eyebrows deep in his paranoid fantasy of somehow pressuring the West into selling Ukraine out, and knowing very well that President Biden knows his international relations history and probably has forgotten more than a lot of people will ever learn, I just wonder if there are any conversations taking place in the Pentagon to take some mothballed destroyers, destroyer escorts, minesweepers, maybe a cruiser or two, and outfit them and put the Ukrainian flag on them, sail them through the Bosporus, and start escorting grain ships out of the Black Sea and into the Mediterranean and into ports on the African continent. I have no evidence whatsoever that that's happening, but history doesn't repeat. Yet it somehow quite often rhymes. I'd be surprised if someone wasn't thinking about that. Oh, and back at the beginning of the program, we had reference to that New York Times story talking about how Nitwit Nero wanted to use the monies that he got from erasing the Veterans Administration to fund his private army. Fascist autocrats often like to have a private army. I think, for instance, about the Sturmabteilung, the SA. The brown shirts. Of course, we've been talking about the Moms for Liberty. Assholes with casseroles. Klanned Karenhood, or my own favorite because I came up with it, the brown skirts. They're kind of a private paramilitary because they love them some guns, too. And Jen Psaki, Jen Psaki had a segment on her program on MSNBC Inside about the Moms for Liberty. Sit, Liberty, sit. Woo! And she really, really did bring the receipts and explained exactly who Klanned Karenhood are, these brown skirts.
Since the height of the COVID pandemic, schools, teachers, and administrators have all become the target of right-wing anger. First, it was the restrictions to their reaction to COVID restrictions, which then morphed into outrage over the teaching of race and identity, and outrage over CRT, critical race theory, which rapidly turned our education system into the front line of the right's ongoing culture war. That anger no doubt sparked the rise of organizations now focused on taking over school boards, pulling books from the shelves, and changing curriculums in schools across the country. In fact, according to a 2022 report from a nonprofit that tracks censorship in America, 70% of those organizations were formed in about an 18-month period, beginning at the start of 2021. Among the largest of these new groups, which you may have heard of, is Moms for Liberty. And it's recently become something of a political powerhouse. Just a few weeks ago, they hosted five Republican presidential candidates, including the frontrunners, Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis. They all came out for Moms for Liberty. Now, the group has declared itself as a nonpartisan organization. And its name does sound innocuous enough. Moms, great, sounds good. Liberty, awesome. Who doesn't like liberty? Moms for Liberty. As the mom of two young kids, that even sounds good to me. But it's vague enough that even some of its own members are pretty unclear as to what the group is really all about, what they're a part of. One mom who became treasurer of an Indiana chapter was even quoted asking, "What am I a part of? I need to know these things. Fair question." Well, I'm here to help. I'm here to help you. Because as benign as Moms for Liberty may sound, its agenda is unmistakably extreme. For instance, you may not know that Moms for Liberty has been helping to lead the movement in pulling books from the library shelves, including classics like The Bluest Eye, great book, The Kite Runner, amazing book, and Mouse, all, as well as other books that...
Mouse, which incidentally is a profoundly moving graphic novel about, Nazis! And We occupy it all. And we tend to think that because we know about things, others don't. So I understand why Jen Psaki is saying, you may not know who these people are. You better find out. To us, it's a little bit like preaching about the, preaching to the choir. Because we've known about Moms for Liberty since they were throwing a conniption about a kindergarten book full of watercolors of pretty little animals that included seahorses.
Deal with race, diversity, and sexuality. The group has turned school board meetings into unruly shouting matches. As an attendee at one Florida meeting described, quote, "They turn around and scream at me that I am a commie and teachers want to see all kids fail. This group brings out the worst in people." The group says this work, all of this shouting, is the work of joyful warriors, is what they call it. Sounds a lot more to me like pretty aggressive harassment. And that behavior is not isolated. It's part of a bigger pattern. Chapters and members across the country have led campaigns targeting community advocates, school board members, and opposing groups. They have repeatedly sent intimidating messages, openly threatened officials, and even baselessly leveled charges of child abuse and sympathizing with pedophilia. Unbelievably, an Indiana chapter even put out a newsletter that quoted Adolf Hitler, saying, quote, "He alone who owns the youth gains the future." That is a Hitler quote. And while they eventually apologized, the organization seemed to later regret that apology.
There's always a reason why something happens, right?
Yes.
One of our moms in a newsletter posts Hitler.
Woo!
Woo! I stand with that mom.
Standing by a mom who quotes Hitler in a newsletter. People cheering for that. That's what you just saw. And as for their claim that they are just a group of concerned nonpartisan moms who happen to care about liberty, consider this. One of the founders, whose name is notably omitted from its website, is a current Republican school board member who is married to the now chairman of the Florida Republican Party. In 2021, he told the Washington Post, quote, "I have been trying for a dozen years to get 20 and 30 year old females involved with the Republican Party. But now Moms for Liberty has done it for me." Sounds pretty apolitical. So below the surface of their sending friendly sounding name and politically vague taglines, they are an unapologetically extreme organization that has built a long
come on, Jen, say it. Fascist.
And controversy in a pretty short period of time. Some free advice out there for people who are not sure what their organization is about, whether it's called Moms for Liberty or Puppies for Ice Cream. It's worth looking into the agenda of an organization before joining it. Sometimes it may not be what you think.
I really hope that there aren't MSNBC viewers out there who are thinking, gee, that sounds nice. I'm going to be a mom for liberty. And that's not a critique of Jen Psaki. I just don't need that to be part of my reality. But the overarching, as we wrap things up here, the overarching theme of this little bit was, you know, fascists and their craving for private armies. And make no mistake that Moms for Liberty, the brown skirts, are part of that. But apparently, well, I mean, it's a fact that Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis wants his own private army too. The Florida State Guard. It was disbanded in 1947. But he wants to revive it because it would be solely under the command of him, Ron Monkey Up DeSantis, or DeSantis, I don't know, whatever he's calling himself these days. Yeah, he wanted a private army, but it's not going particularly well. Over the weekend, the New York Times said, The deployment this spring of the Florida State Guard has been mired in internal turmoil, with some recruits complaining that what was supposed to be a civilian disaster response organization, sure it was, had become heavily militarized, requiring volunteers to participate in marching drills. No, marching? Really? Fascists? Marching? Let's not call it marching. Let's call it stepping. Huh? And military-style training sessions on weapons and hand-to-hand combat. People were initially accepted into the Florida State Guard. And at least 30 of them have since quit or been kicked out. Here! Some of those people kicked out were kicked out after they began to say, hey, this doesn't feel like a civilian disaster relief organization. This feels like a Sturmabteilung. And frankly, given the homoeroticism of some of Monkey Up's messaging and ads, would anyone be particularly surprised to find out that the guy who wants his own personal army may have something secretly in common with, Ernst Röhm? Because eventually the Sturmabteilung became a bit of an embarrassment to Herr Hitler. And on the last day of June 1934, Hitler had Ernst Röhm in the leadership of the SA rubbed out! Sick Semper Tyrannis, y'all. So my apologies for the lack of 1 hour of this program, but that's the program for this Moran Monday. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Darlene's got $15 out there. If somebody would match it, and we would be done, completely done, with last Monday and actually be started on last Tuesday when we get around to the program tomorrow on Tuesday. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you so much. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Let me check in here and see if I was the lone moderator this evening. I know Roger is up to his eyeballs in canning right now and gardening. There's Roger. Hey, Roger. I hope things are going well in the garden and over there by the canner. Roger's canned goods are nothing short of amazing. I have been the beneficiary of some of them, and they are just wonderful. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Roger. Steve, I hope things are going well. Roger was setting up for the fair today. I'm not going to sing anything about Scarborough Fair or anything, I promise. That way maybe we'll get the Darlene's $15 match. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thanks so much for being patient with me when I'm late getting back from Tennistan. And other things, too. I try, I really do. Remember, if you're listening to the podcast, please like and subscribe. Leave a comment wherever you're listening. I and the rest of the Horn Family Community Congregation do so appreciate it. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Get your booster. COVID's not gone. Oh, big news today. By the time the fall RSV season comes around, as I predicted months ago, there will finally be an RSV vaccine for babies and older Americans. It is the leading cause of death in infants and newborns, RSV. It was happy news to hear that. But do, please, get your COVID booster if you can, if you're eligible. Wear your masks if you're around maggots or big crowds of people you don't know. You know how the maggots are. They don't give a damn about anybody but themselves. I don't want to get no vaccine. I don't want no Bill Gates liquid 5G towers running around in my bloodstream. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Carry some with you, pocket or purse. I used it liberally this weekend. I was in, I went from one maggot state to another maggot state. Maintain your social distance. Still doing that, too. And for God's sakes, if she sounds temporarily rational, if marginal trailer queen comes towards you on the sidewalk, burbling about all the things that President Biden's accomplished, nonetheless, avoid her like the plague. Because she is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.